I'd just like to introduce Jenny Buckworth from the Northern Territory Department of Employment, Education and Training to talk about lands in the Outback.
Okay, good afternoon everyone. I've got a bit of a presentation here that's probably slightly different from some of the ones we've seen today, because I've broken it into two parts. What we've done in the Northern Territory is bring lands to the Territory. So I thought it's probably worth you knowing a bit about the Territory if you've never been there, and then show you how we've done that with lands. But I guess as an indication, have you been to the Territory?
Yep.
So if you've been there, you might recognise some of the sites that I've got here, and if you haven't, well, you've got it to look forward to. So what we've done is introduce lands to the Territory, but the irony is, in vast spaces in the Northern Territory, we have not one sheep. We've got plenty of cattle country, we've got loads of farming country, but we don't keep sheep or lambs. What we do keep is crocodiles in the top end. And we're well aware of that because every week in the paper we're reminded of it. And as you can see here, this is not Crocodile Dundee, but Crocodile Undie. And at least once a week we'll have something about crocodiles in the Territory. So again, we're trying to introduce lands, which is going to be probably a little bit more educational in its value than crocodiles. So what we want is equitable opportunities for our teachers and our students across the Territory. And here's just some facts and figures for you about the Territory in terms of Australia. Australia, 21 million, and there's Antigua. It's tiny. Population of Darwin in the Northern Territory is the biggest population, 72,000. And Alice Springs is the next largest city, and all of the rest, which isn't, I guess, that many in the big scheme of things, is dotted around the rest of the Northern Territory. When you consider that, how many was there here? Just over 30,000 students at this university alone, it starts to take on a new perspective. Not for us, because we're used to it. Some other sort of unique features of the Territory is its remoteness. 48% of the people that live there live in remote or very remote. When we have to do national surveys, there's not one part of the Northern Territory that rates as a city. We're all rated as regional or remote. Population density, 0.1 of a person per kilometre square. So we just don't have any people. We've got a young population with 29% being less than 15 years of age. That's slowly changing. The population is starting to age a little bit, but nothing like the rest of Australia. 29% of that are Indigenous, and 40% of our students are Indigenous. The other thing that's important to know about our students is English. Our Indigenous students in the remote locations, English is usually their second, third, fourth or fifth language. So it's not widely spoken. Just as a visual, you can see in a 10 kilometre square area, we've got one person here. In New South Wales, we've got lots more. So we just get a little bit of perspective there. And I think it's probably worth it if you've never been to the Territory to start to get that understanding. We don't have many people, so here's a sign I saw just recently. Instead of a children's crossing, we have a watch for people. And that was just on a road sign somewhere. And watch for lambs too, because they're there. They're here. We've distributed the lambs application to all of our schools in the NT. All of our schools, 186. Which is not a lot, but they're very fast spread, fast lung and fast spread. We've got almost 3,500 teachers. And again, 41,000 students, which is just a little bit more than this university. A big challenge, and this is one of the reasons that we've done it centrally and run it up for every school, is travel costs of getting out to schools. So with such distances to cover, the travel costs are enormous. Relief teachers, we don't have many. I think there's about 300 teachers to cover the whole of the NT. And the big thing that we need to keep in mind all the time is we have a huge student turnover. So this is enrolments and transfers within 1 year. 64% of our students enrol and transfer within the year. And the teachers aren't probably that far behind them. So there's a lot of turnover of all of our people. And I spoke about the language before. Many of our students are not first language English speakers. Picture of the territory, if you're not familiar with it, there it is in Australia. And here it is broken up into the clusters that we work in. Darwin being up here, East Darwin here. Our most remote schools are sitting around here. And Alice Springs with the second largest population. Just as an indication, to fly from Darwin to Largemoland just recently cost $4,000, just a one-way flight. So it's just enormous, or it's a three-day drive. So getting out there to do any installations or training, it's huge. And with the turnover, it becomes huger. So I'm just sort of painting the perspective. I hope that's okay if you're new anyway. And the other thing we need to be mindful of all of the time is with most of those locations, all of that is Aboriginal land. So we need to be really mindful of being on Aboriginal land and abiding by the laws and conditions of being on their land. And the lands are there now too. Getting around, a little bit more scenery. To get out there, you usually need a four-wheel drive. In the wet season, roads and bridges get washed away in a flash. So here's some person who's improvised a little bit to sort of make a crossing happen. And until recently, you probably were aware that we were real cowboy country with unlimited speed zones. So you could just fly through those highways at any speed you chose, as long as it was safe. That's just changed this year, and the speed zones in the Northern Territory are 130 kilometres an hour. If you've done four-wheel drive training, you'd know how to do with this. This was a flat that I had a couple of weeks ago, and you can see the entire tread just has flown off. So it's a bit of a tense moment from there. But I'm here, so it's all right. And while you're waiting to change the tyre, sometimes the scenery is not that bad. You know, there's pluses. The other thing we need to do in the wet, when most or a lot of the top end of Australia is just cut off due to the flash flooding that we get, a lot of the travel's done by a small plane. And a lot of the transporting of goods is done by a small plane. So this is one of the server cabinets that needs to be somehow or other fitted into that plane to get out to one of our communities. So there's challenges all the time. And when you're flying to a community, when you get there, you can see this is not a particularly big community, but it's indicative of one of the dots that we saw on the map before in the remote regions. And when you get there, the clue to where you might be going, as in a school, will be find the place that's got the satellite dish. And then you'll make your way towards that place and do your work at the school for the day. Can anyone see the satellite dish? It's there.
Three o'clock.
That looks a bit like a satellite dish, doesn't it? Water tanks. Satellite dishes over here.
So you keep surfing.
And then when you finally get to come into land, the airport terminal is not usually that grand. So you don't get cakes and coffee at this terminal. But it's still there for you, it's a shelter. So that's, as you can see, Gapawea in the top end. Or if you're driving in, you just drive around the community until you find the building with the satellite dish and that little school. So that's one of our schools towards the centre, near Catherine. And that's one of our transportable schools. There's lots of those in our communities because the population, as you saw with the student movement, population is rising and falling a lot. So it's a very expensive exercise to be an educator in UNT. When you get to the school, and I'm getting to the lambs part now, so I've done the sort of tourism in the territory bit. When you get to the school, it's quite well equipped. We've got good infrastructure in our schools. So this, as an indication, you can see the server here. Every school has a server. Every school is supplied with desktops on a ratio of 1 per 10 students. Every teacher has a teacher laptop or a notebook. And there's a network within the school and internet connections provided for all of the schools as well. Internet connection is very good to very bad, depending on where the school is. And the teacher and the students who may be turning over on a regular basis may not have the capacity to manage any of this stuff. So we have a completely managed network in the whole of the territory. And the managed network will attend to any of the breakages. So there's on-site support, there's remote support for anything that may go wrong. If anything breaks, there's a turnaround of equipment or there's remote repair of that equipment. And we have a lot of online applications run up centrally simply because we don't know that this teacher is going to stay in that school for very long. And even if that teacher has the capacity to make any repairs or install anything at the server level. So that's the reasoning behind putting all of our applications centrally and managing them in that way. LAMS, we ran a pilot last year with 8 schools, about 50 students, about 10 teachers, and it was extremely successful, very, very positive. Following that, we decided to take LAMS and run it up centrally, as we've done with other applications, with our LMS, as you know, we have one central application for those. So we've run it up centrally, and we've done, at the beginning of this year, an integration with LDAP. So we've had an import of all of our users from our central user authentication system to recognise all of our schools, 186, and all of our students. So when a student or teacher logs on, they've had one dump of all of that information into each of the schools, and then the schools can go about setting up classes within their schools because the users exist against those schools' names. So that was great, but it was static. So we've taken the users from LDAP and dumped it into LAMS, and it's static. So as our students and teachers move, that's not going to be sustainable. So we needed to integrate with our authentication system. So as students move between schools, they can log on at their new school and will pick up their identity at the new location. So that's work that the LAMS team have done for us, and we've only just rolled that out in the last 2 weeks. So we'll be able to, or students and teachers will be able to follow their access level at the point in the territory, the place of the territory that they are. So you can see some schools have started to set up their subgroups. And every school has students that are learners, and every school has teachers that are authors, monitors, and group admins, so that they can manage the system at their school. Once a year, we'll do a synchronise. I think it'll be once a year. It's early days yet. Once a year, there'll be synchronisation with LDAP so that any of the users can be updated automatically. At the moment, it's on as-needs basis. When a student or teacher logs in, it'll pull the information from the user authentication system and then match them. Once a year, we'll do an automatic match with all of our users. And we get to sort of determine if it's once a year or more often. Additionally to that, we determined that if students, this student whose name is Dummy, that was not my idea, this student here may move from their location to a different school. And when they move, their completed data or lessons that they're part of would be lost when they move on. So we wanted that to travel with them. So when this student logs on at a new school, when they go into my profile, instead of the regular information you see here, if you recall, it's going to be edit my profile, change my portrait and change my password. The password is no longer relevant because it's going to be authenticated against our user admin system. So instead, there's a new page here called All My Lessons. So this particular student who's gone to a new school will click on All My Lessons, and these are the lessons that this student was part of at the previous school, so it will follow them. So we think this will be a really valuable feature to have in the Territory and probably in other states as well, if you do it the way we've done it. So this is the other one that you'd normally see when you're logging on. You have the ability to change your password. That's not going to be applicable at all with our integration with our user authentication system. And I think, yes, just to finish up, another little visit from one of our friends in the Northern Territory. And with a little bit of information about the Territory, why we've done it and what we've done, I think that's it for me. Have you got any questions? And if they're technical, I'll just...
How will you evaluate the program?
How will we? Well, I'd like to be able to... I haven't gone there yet, but go in and look at reporting, which we need to do. And what we need... Although we've launched it, we need to somehow or other get on top of our professional development and get out to schools and spend time, whether it be one-on-one or build capacity within a school and then grow from there, so the capacity grows around schools rather than in little pockets here and there, because it's going to be a big challenge, I'm guessing, just to get out there and make sure it's sustainable.
If I understand you, you're centralising it, the access, right?
Yeah.
So, is it... I would be thinking that it would be very, because of the diversity, you know, that you could develop a centralized curriculum using LAMS for access to these students and draw upon richer, perhaps, resources in Australia and other places. And I don't know, I mean, to me that would be a really significant way, I would think, of mitigating some of the challenges associated with staff turnover.
Absolutely. And I mean, once we really get the word out there, we'd like to perhaps set up our own maps.
Yeah. Well,
so that we can share resources that are relevant to our context in particular.
Because there's so isolated. And I mean, I'm from Canada, and I've been in northern parts of British Columbia. Kind of isolation we're talking about exists in Canada.
Absolutely.
As well. And so I would see this would be a very powerful way for those children to connect, not just to the territories, but I don't see why they couldn't be connected into major city areas as well.
Definitely. Another thing that I almost forgot to mention is that our distance ed, which has until now been known as school of the year, delivering a lot of the lessons over radio, are starting to run with something like this as well. So taking, as Margaret, if you saw Margaret's presentation, we're taking hard copy and transferring it to soft copy and then delivering to students via something like NAMS. So they're just starting to run on that path. So I think that's along the same lines as what you're suggesting. And I guess the other thing is that the integration that LAMS has done with Moodle, we could look at integrating with other LMSs as well, because it can become just as powerful as the content that we're going to be doing.
Can I ask one last thing?
Yeah.
If somebody else has a thing to answer the question.
No, you are.
You say it's very good access and very, very poor access.
Oh.
That, okay, yeah. That is...
Sorry?
But I call it Elspeth.
Yeah. No, if it's satellite, I mean, are you not just pumping it up and then, renting satellite time and like shoving the content up and then sending it down in periods? Or, well, I don't understand how object technology works. Satellite, you're not connected all the time, it's too expensive.
We have a variety of, I guess, access, as I said, ranging from very good to very poor. And we have major concerns about the very poor level. So our very good levels is, you know, 100 megabits of access in our, what we call, urban settings. Then we go right to the, and then we have terrestrial access, which is sharing the terrestrial line with police and health and other government agencies in the community, first in, first serve sort of thing. And then we have two-way satellite situation in our remote communities, which just doesn't handle a lot of what's required, particularly if there's any video. So the people in very remote communities are just not going to run with this very well at the moment. But there's a new government coming in with big promises, and we've also got a bit of a satellite solution that's going to kick in for us next year. So hopefully there'll be a more equitable sort of level of access for the people in the territory next year. At the moment, the satellite thing is just not a good solution. But I have been in schools running two-way satellite, and if they're not running video, their access is going fine. You know, and if the kids in the school aren't downloading music and stuff like that, your access is okay. So I guess it becomes a school management type of scenario.
What's your ratio of students?
1 to 10.
So what about the distance end centers? They're broadcasting two-way satellite. How successful are they?
They're not running with the same provider. Yeah. So they've got probably a better performance, but they still have concerns about this. They have been using an LMS for some of their delivery, and again, wherever there's video, that can't be on. Even our video conferencing, the system that we use in the NT has been created particularly for satellite delivery, so it's not something that's very interchangeable with other states and territories either, because it's, if you're using, say, Illumina or Skype or something like that, they're not going to run the satellite system we have. It's been developed to do that. So it just puts us out on our own. We don't want to be there forever.
Some of the New South Wales schools can't also be outcomes of
data. Yeah. You might want to use the system they're using, because I know it works.
So even though the New South Wales schools can come to the it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Yep.
Just on the, like, the collaborative kind of grants, are you making use of that between schools, or planning to do that? The group next time?
It was done in the pilot, and as I said, this has been rolled out fairly recently. And I guess the drive behind pushing really hard was until we had the authentication integration. Now that's happened, I think we'll push a lot harder, and then that collaboration between the schools should.
So every student has their own login?
Every student.
Through the LDAP?
Yeah. In some schools they choose not to have separate identities for early childhood, and some of the remote communities, community might share generic log on simply because it's been the easiest way to go, but that's going to change. I think the expectation in the future is people will have their identity.
What age do you start using names? What sort of year level students do you start using?
We had year ones last year in the trial.
So just any green, right?
Yeah.
So just over green.
Haven't tried it with anyone younger than that. And I mean, that's been part of the request from our communities in particular, where literacy level's not the same, largely because of the second, third, fourth language idea. They'd like to have a lot more audio available to them so that they can gradually grow into the literacy and the English language.
Bring in different Aboriginal dialects as well.
Yeah, and that's been a big request too, that a lot of, if I just go back, I'll just go back to this just to illustrate it a little better. You may well be familiar. Could have gone faster way than this, Jenny. we would have a number of communities around here that share the same language group, and they'd want to just share and use the collaborative tools across their language group, and then just not particularly share them at all with people down here or up here. But it'd be really nice for them to keep their language alive, and LAMS is something that they can do with. Sorry? Our curriculum people are very interested in probably putting up some exemplaries or examples for them. And I guess once that scene is set with exemplars, people will be able to move into it with a lot more ease as well.
So the teachers or the employed teachers to train them and develop them?
We've actually pinpointed our teachers. If you're familiar with the Learning Federation that's made a lot of online resources, part of the one of the projects we're doing now is using people who are actively looking at those and building their knowledge of that type of resource into sequences and using them as trainers within the school.
I take it from your comments today, you're not expecting your teachers to begin using this next year. So what is your expected uptake over the next years?
I think realistically, if we had a third of our teachers using it, that would be good. And I think that would be, we wouldn't expect more, given the circumstances. And I think, can you understand, I needed to show you the circumstances and the turnover. And I think if we get a third, we'd be happy.
I was going to ask a question before about how you intend to train all your teachers for a massive implementation like this. Would you look at working with maybe some universities with your free service teachers, start to integrate that if it's going to be a requirement to the department?
Some of our universities, that's singular. And we do work with our university.
Yes. Understanding that you may draw from other universities.
Yeah, but we've worked closely with the university, and there's campuses in three locations in the territory, and we have worked with them.
Ignorant of the geography of Australia, apologies, but it seems to me that Western Australia, Queensland, and Southern Australia, and New York, and that's what we probably have remote areas as well. And are they in as dire straits in terms of infrastructure as, say, the Northern Territories, or is this a political issue?
Excellent question. We certainly have those remote locations, and I know that there's people in this room from those states. They have their remote and I guess lesser accessible sort of areas and lesser accessibility to this type of thing. But is there Western Australian people here? I believe the infrastructure in Western Australia is very good. I think they put a lot of money into it a few years ago, so I don't think they have as many concerns as we have. New South Wales and Queensland, I think, have huge concerns. I can't speak for South Australia, but I'm guessing across this desert area of Western South Australia, it would be similar.
Predominantly, they have a school of the year based out of
school of the
Augusta, top of the peak coming up in the Gulf there, and out of Adelaide as well. Not too dissimilar to what I've heard a bit about New South Wales.
The very western part
of
New South Wales.
Some of the guy was presenting the quite original satellite radio with us.
So, yes, we're definitely not alone. But the other thing, part of the reason I guess I put up the population figures is we can get things done because we're smaller in number two. So we have historically got things done, tested them out, and because we're a territory, we get federal money too. So we're a little bit enviable in that area.
Yeah, I guess I'm just thinking, like, we have telephone lines in all our local communities. So these places don't have telephone lines.
Oh yeah.
They do.
Then why?
Most of the districts
say dial up is is doable on labs. So you don't have to do that. And you can do things on 56K. You know, there are some of the technologies that run on 56K designed for 56K.
Most of these sites operate off of a microwave distributed system. Their sites are lucky to get 9600, if a connection at all, because you're talking about multiple voice connections of 2400 sharing one radio bearer over hundreds of kilometres and repeating that bearer back. And so, yes, while there is voice communications, very much limited to voice.
But I'm really positive about it. I think it's great.
So the satellite's like, yeah. I can talk to you more about the VSAT.
I was going to ask I guess the impact of industry in those places, because having mines and so forth would help the infrastructure in a region.
Yeah, it certainly would, but
I guess are the problems in those places that don't have the primary industry as much.
Most of the locations where we have schools are not sort of adjacent to mine sites. Yeah. Probably the biggest mine sites we have that have got input into any of the infrastructure are the ones here. And a lot of these may come, a lot of this is fairly new sort of development and mining.
Or uranium.
Oh, the uranium's out here.
Let's have that uranium.
But that mine is pretty much folded now.
Mostly South Australia, most of the uranium.
Now, I think the problem too was that there might be telephone lines either side of the mine, and it's a huge expense. And there's one little skinny line running up maybe 100 kgs or 40 kgs with the solid one.
Thanks, everyone.